And now, here's your host of Lab Radio, sponsored by Coinstructive.
So I'm with Joe Ciccolo. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Awesome, awesome.
Thank you.
Yes, especially on the podcast. You're with BitAML. You're the founder and president of it. And tell us about yourself. You know, like, what's your background and what was your pathway going from where you started to now launching BitAML, which is anti-money laundering?
Yeah, so I'm proud to say I'm a defector of the traditional banking system. I actually spent over 10 years in bank compliance. And I got introduced to Bitcoin through regulatory guidance issued by FinCEN, as we know, in 2013. FinCEN came out and said Bitcoin operators are indeed MSBs, money services businesses. And that sort of spurred me to thinking, what's this all about? What is this Bitcoin thing anyway? And my colleagues in the traditional banking sort of dismissed it right away. And I figured there's something more to it. So I started going down that rabbit hole that everybody describes. And I did some more research and said, this is going to be something. This really represents a revolution in banking that we've been itching for so long. And I got really excited about it. And fast forward a year or two later, I started up with started BitAML, and I hit the ground running right away. Worked with a lot of clients in the Bitcoin ATM operating space, trading platforms, peer-to-peer lending. Runs the gamut.
What was your role in their banking positions originally?
So I helped start a number of AML programs for top-tier banks. And served in some various leadership capacities there, helping with record retention and audit remediation projects. So I've seen the side where the regulators are already there and sat across from regulators. So it's a very, very unique experience and one that I certainly don't wish on anyone in this space. But it gives me a lot of perspective, and I'm so glad that I'm able to share that experience for the positive with my clients and with just anyone in the space. I love when people come up to me during panel discussions or just walking around and say, hey, I've got a question about compliance, because it shows they're really interested, and I love what I do, so I love sharing that information.
What is that conversation like when the regulators are already there? I mean, is it pretty, like, tense and, like, stressful, or, I mean, can there be a range where it could be kind of like, look, we're coming in early, like, please fix this stuff, or to all the way to you screwed up and, like, there's going to be trouble? I'm sure there's that gamut, but
sure,
what is it?
It's,
yeah.
It's situational. I feel like I was there more in peacetime when things were already sort of on the table, so to speak, and really helping to clean up some of the messes that were there. And at that point, the regulators wanted to see you're doing a good job. They sit across from you. The only tension, I would say, is everyone's very carefully scripted in what they share. Obviously, well, I'm not a lawyer, but obviously I was surrounded by lawyers during this process, and it's a very delicate exchange back and forth, and you really have to be careful with what you say, but I think that the tension, at least at that point, is out of the window, but I'm not saying that that's unique
right.
by any stretch, that's sort of situational.
This reminds me of, I was talking to Spencer earlier, and he comes from the equity and institutional investor angle, and his perspective was, you know, once the regulators are there, it's like, he's like, they're not all bad, but, you know, like, with his role in SEC, he has a lot of rules of what he can and can't say. So
right.
It's like, he really does have to think through, what he says in a very similar manner as what you're saying. Because it's kind of like, that information, like, has a lot of ripple effects.
Exactly. You definitely have to be careful of what you say. And you know, I sort of liken it when the regulators are there, I sort of liken it to maybe a friend that you don't want to really have hanging around your house has suddenly taken over your spare bedroom, right? So the regulators are there, they're on site, and again, you have to be careful what you say and do. But these things aren't insurmountable, but that's why it's important to get ahead of your compliance affairs early on in the process, and really, as we mentioned off mic here, really build your AML program from the very beginning and grow and mature with it as a business.
Mm-hmm. Well, we definitely need to dig more into, like, AML and some of the bottlenecks with the industry. But before we get into that, what is your definition of Bitcoin?
Bitcoin to me means many things, right? So I don't get into more of the technical definitions. For me, it means more independence, self-banking, really debanking all of us, right? Just really a new way of empowering individuals to sort of harness and control their own money. And I guess by virtue of that, control their own destiny.
Wow.
So that's what it means to me. I know that's a little,
no, I like
a little
that.
Higher level for this conversation, but
it's very philosophical,
you know,
but
it,
I like that.
It is philosophical for sure. There are plenty of great tutorials out there about the technical ins and outs of Bitcoin, but to me, it really represents that independence and harnessing one's own energy.
I like
with
that.
With regard to their finances.
And
putting people in charge of their finances like never before.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's funny. I think we Bitcoin has taught me how good we have it in terms of our money system. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's issues, but compared to like in Argentina where 20% of your, you know, money is and there's now 20% less. I mean, if we were getting fluctuations like that, I think we would think so differently about our currency system. So,
absolutely.
So the rest of the world, to some degree, can derive an even bigger amount of value in some applications in particular. Obviously, there's a lot of applications that we need too. But it's just, yeah, you're right. I like that definition a lot. How about the blockchain? How would you define the blockchain?
Blockchain, I'm going to get a little bit more direct here. It's an immutable record. Okay. And to me, I guess putting on my compliance hat, so to speak, it represents an audit trail. And one of the things we were discussing at the regulatory panel here at Inside Bitcoin San Diego was how does that come across to a regulator or come across to a court?
Mm-hmm.
And so far, the courts and the regulators haven't really said, oh, okay, that's the equivalent of an audited financial statement. We haven't really reached that level yet, and I say yet because I'm very optimistic that one day we will look at the blockchain and say, you know, that's set in stone. That is as good as an audited financial statement from an auditing firm. Again, we're not there yet, but I think that as the blockchain sort of matures in a sense that more companies, more industries, and more entrepreneurs, for that matter, are putting some ideas using blockchain, I'd like to think that that's the course we're on, and that would be great to have that as sort of the audit trail or audit record that everyone aspires to have their affairs or to have their commerce conducted.
Interesting. That's making me laugh because I'm imagining, I was on the blockchain at that time, I swear. You know, it's like some kind of alibi, like if they could somehow prove timestamp where you were. I mean, I wonder if one day, you know, there could be sort of like a legal basis for some of these things, like a timestamp, or if you checked in somewhere and there's like that, you know, hash assigned with your check-in that, you know, couldn't be immutable, as you put it. I like that word. You know, you wonder how many things that could apply to, governance.
I have some lawyer friends in the industry, and they've represented some early stage clients that I'd say got in a little over their head early on. And, you know, they tried to present the blockchain as that evidentiary material, and it was rejected by the court. And they said, no, give me audited financial statements. Everything's on the blockchain. You don't understand. And so there's this back and forth, and I think that, as I said before, it comes with the maturing and the growth of the space.
Right. And as they learn to trust that, like, you know, I'm thinking early credit cards, that was really fearful time, like credit cards on the internet, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like pretty much a no-brainer. So I wonder if there's going to be a similar cadence with like, no, that's really scary, or no, we're not going to accept that. That's not a legal document. To, yep, definitely legal.
Well, let's hope so. I'm optimistic. Despite being a compliance guy, I'm very optimistic. And
maybe the compliance will drive the precedence, because compliance has these very key mechanisms to operate. So if they start to accept even a little bit of like validation from a blockchain activity, I mean, that would actually probably be a good thing, even though people are kind of scared of that situation, I guess, with compliance.
I look forward to it.
I like that. So, I think let's jump in a little bit to the whole, like, you know, your company's called BitAML, so there's this anti-money laundering issue and a KYC, know your customer. Break down some sort of the basic concepts that are in compliance and how you have tackled each one. And I know AML has been your main sort of one, but I'm sure the other ones play a part too, right?
Sure, yeah. And my focus is primarily on AML, although I do some consulting with regard to fraud mitigation and a little bit into cybersecurity, but mostly into AML. The focus there is on meeting FinCEN guidelines for establishing an AML program. And what that means is having a system of onboarding of clients through KYC, know your customer, customer due diligence, having a system for ongoing training, having a written AML program, having surveillance and monitoring tools so you can look for and report suspicious activity, conducting a risk assessment to understand the risks involved in your institution. And really what I deliver to my clients is a holistic, sort of holistic framework for establishing their compliance program. And off of that, as you mentioned, there are some other factors that sort of roll together, including fraud prevention and cybersecurity. So I work with some of the other folks in that space. The risk community is very specialized, so I'm very careful to stay within the AML scope of things. But it's great to have other contacts in this industry that are focusing on those other areas and using technology to sort of tie that in together.
Got it. So they all sort of fit together from a sort of documentation vetting process, it sounds like, to sort of ensure that you're not onboarding bad actors. I don't know if I'm you know, that the reason for compliance.
Right. And actually, Finson does use the verbiage bad actors.
Oh, seriously? Nice. Like in their actual
illicit
documents?
Actors, yes.
Nice. Yeah, illicit actors. Wow. I'm wondering why has compliance seems to be kind of like a, I don't know if bottleneck's the right word or sticking point or hump. People seem to be almost a little bit anti-compliance, but clearly it's needed because to get that full sort of mainstream recognition and support, arguably, there probably will be quite a lot of compliance needs and requirements that have yet to be determined and are determined now. So why do you think there's sort of this rocky road or at this time in terms of compliance? And you know, maybe there, maybe part of it's uncertainty and part of it's just people don't know what to do, or people, the rules are being made up kind of as you were going. I mean, where is, why is this such a sticking point for both Bitcoin and the financial industry?
Sure. I mean, two schools of thought on sort of the sticking point of compliance, right? So I think at the outset, we had an industry, the Bitcoin industry, that was really, the narrative was really dominated by a lot of people who philosophically believed that KYC didn't apply, that that was data invasion, data privacy was being sacrificed. And I'm not saying those points aren't unwarranted. I certainly agree with many of those points.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't change the fact that regulation is here now and it exists in this form. And I think that we weren't having a good discussion about sensible regulation. And I think that that has sort of faded away a little bit. I'm very optimistic to see different groups and Coin Center comes to mind that have just really come up front and said, listen, we understand the regulations here. We have to deal with it, but let's deal with it sensibly. Mm-hmm. And let's bring our story to the table. Let's talk about blockchain. Let's talk about some of the great things that are going on in this industry. You know, that are, it's on the up and up, that really people are taking their AML compliance obligation seriously. But let's have a discussion about where regulation kicks in and how that fits. The other factor is you have a lot of very energetic and a lot of very smart and talented people that are coming out with the latest and greatest apps, the latest and greatest technology, all different ways to bring Bitcoin into not just the financial services realm, but all these different areas and aspects of our life. And people are so excited to bring these things to the market. They get enthusiastic about it. It starts off as an app. It starts off as something that they've developed in their basement. They bring it out to the marketplace, and they sort of reveal themselves. And things gradually become more successful. Things take off, which is great. Unfortunately, they didn't remember to sort of pack their compliance tools as they're going on this journey. And so it's very difficult to sort of unring the bell. And so I think maybe not so much hubris or anything of that nature, certainly, but I think it's people get excited and they bring things to the market and they don't necessarily think that compliance should be attached to the wagon at the very beginning.
Right, right, right. Well, this actually begs the question, why do we need compliance? Like, a lot of the time it's easy to say, oh, we don't need compliance, free market with this and that, but then it's nice to kind of go back to history. Well, why did it exist in the first place? So love to hear, you know, why do we even have it to begin with, you know, because clearly there's a reason, otherwise it wouldn't even be there.
Right. I guess we can give a brief history right now for your listeners. So the Bank Secrecy Act came out in 1970, which was also the same year, my libertarian friends will know, as the Controlled Substances Act came out in 1970 as well. Coincidence? I'll leave that to your listeners. So the Bank Secrecy Act came out. It was very, very informational. There wasn't much teeth behind sort of enforcing AML. At that point, it was merely asking the banks to report transactions over $10,000. It was much more of a sort of reporting mechanism than anything else. And then fast forward to 1986, when we finally had a money laundering statute on the books. So it's actually relatively recently.
Wow.
And that, of course, was in response to at the height of the war on drugs, cocaine cowboys, what was going on down in Miami, and a lot of the drug money, right? So these banks were just basically sort of looking the other way. And so at that time, money laundering laws kicked in, and we started to have the onus on the banks to report suspicious activity. And it sort of money laundering really followed in lockstep with sort of war on drugs. And then until 2001, as you know, the tragedy of 9/11, the USA Patriot Act came out shortly thereafter. I can hear the boos right now from the libertarian audience. But at that point, there were more regulations and more steps that need to be taken in terms of KYC, and that really ramped up sort of the efforts in terrorist finance, counterterrorism finance, as well as more onus on the banks to report suspicious activity and really report all different types of activity and keep certain records. So that's sort of a brief history of AML here in the States. And I think that we are starting to revisit that. And I think Bitcoin and sort of the blockchain discussion has really opened us up to revisiting the Patriot Act and Bank Secrecy Act. I can't promise anything, and I don't think there's anything currently pending in Washington.
Right.
But I think the discussion is there, and I think generationally we're seeing this shift towards data privacy, and we're starting to ask, as you mentioned, starting to ask these questions about where did this all start?
Right.
Does this make sense, and where are we going?
Right.
And hopefully Bitcoin can be a great part of that dialogue sort of insert itself into the discussion.
Yeah, like, so Andreas Antonopoulos, there was a really great video of him talking to the Canadian Parliament, and
yes,
it was actually a very constructive discussion. But, like, it seems like, I think Andreas, I can see where he gets really frustrated when the financial institutions want to reattach some of the old mechanisms, like your identity being connected to your credit card, you know, like,
right.
And I think part of the situation with Bitcoin is it's creating a layer, it's not really like anonymous, right, but it's creating this layer of separation so that your, like, address and all this personal information is not just like right there on the card, like connected to it, right? So I guess there seems to be this balance of doing what sort of following along with the framework of why this exists in the first place, and then combining that with this new technology, which may not need some of these older components, because the whole point of the technology was to kind of evolve and make things more secure. So it's like, that seems to be at odds with the understanding of the regulators themselves. So I'm just curious how that's going to play out, or, like, you know, what's that going to take to... Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
So it's like, what's it going to take to kind of figure that out? You know, I mean, obviously more discussions, but from your expertise angle, I'm wondering what will have to happen more.
It's a round peg square hole, right? So
okay.
MSBs are certain Bitcoin MSBs. Are they really MSBs? Well, they, in some ways they meet those characteristics, in some ways they don't. But I guess more to your point in terms of what regulators are looking for, they are asking for a lot of analog pieces of information. You know, at certain thresholds you have to gather certain pieces of information, name, address, and creating what you mentioned Andreas earlier, what Andreas refers to affectionately as honeypots. You know, you're creating all these centralized honeypots to collect data. Well, where do you think the hackers are going, right? They're going to go where that data is. So it's very interesting that, we'll pick on Losky, for example, in New York, part of the component of having a licensed program is to actually have cybersecurity in place to protect the information that the state wants you to collect, but you wouldn't have otherwise collected it had you had the choice.
It would be
to
like,
so
you
not
have to put a pile of gold right here in this park.
Right.
You better make sure no one takes
it. Yeah, and
gold.
Give me your security plan to
it's
protect
like,
that gold.
Why do I put that there in the first
right,
place?
Right, right. And I think I'd like to think that we're sort of maturing in this space at the same time regulators are kind of coming on board and seeing you know, what we mean by, you know, tokenization and the fact that you don't have to transmit all this information.
Mm-hmm.
The requiring you to store that information, that might take some time to change,
right.
You know, to affect the hearts and minds, if you will. So hopefully that's coming, and again, I remain optimistic.
That's a really, and I loved your brief history of, I had no idea the... even though it makes perfect sense now that you said it, but the whole AML connection with the drug war, I didn't fully draw that connection, but now that you mention it, it makes a lot of sense. But some libertarian audience, just to give them some kudos, like they might argue, well, it was the federal government that created the whole drug war to begin with. So it's like they're creating this like problem, and then they're like using that problem as like the basis for imposing these like rules. So I think a lot of people would have an issue with that, which part of me definitely agrees with, but then part of me also, like, the common lawyer response is like, but this is the world we live in, so it's like we got to deal with this. So I kind of like that grounded approach, even though I would rather they didn't do that in the first place and build all this, you know, sort of society hurting things around that existing, but
sure. And agree, yeah, or disagree. So FATF, I think we've heard the acronym Financial Action Task Force, which is an international body, non-binding, but they're very influential in the AML space. You know, they've been very vocal on that topic. So see different things from them, and maybe that will sort of influence where we go in the industry as well.
Gotcha. So let's maybe move a little towards, like, you know, we got organizations and businesses that are, you know, listening and trying to figure out how this might be relevant to their organization or business or whatever, you know, institution they're running. What are the biggest opportunities using this technology and why? And by technology, I mean blockchain, and to include, you know, some of your area, like, you know, compliance and stuff like that.
I think the biggest opportunities in the space have yet to be discovered. I really do. I think that the next great discovery is out there, and someone is probably working on it or very close to starting to work on it. I think that the sort of Bitcoin 2.0, 3.0, however you want to draw the lines, when we get into to smart contracts and things of that nature, move away from traditional banking, I think that's where we're going to see some of the greatest impacts, and hopefully we can tackle some of the world's problems. I think that,
that would
be fantastic.
What, if you could wave a magic wand, what would you change about the industry?
You know, I'm tempted to say, you know, everybody accept Bitcoin and this will be great, and we'll just, you know, I don't want anybody to get in the way of
Bitcoin. Ride off into the sunset.
that would be so tempting, but I think that we lose the opportunity there to really tell Bitcoin's story, to really sort of cleanse the financial services market of what's there now. So my magic wand wish here would be that my clients and many others in the space would have access to traditional banking, would be able to get a bank account, right? Because that will allow them to start getting into business, to start putting out their products and services that people want, to make the mistakes, to learn from it, build on technology, rather than use my magic wand to say, oh, make everything great and we have Bitcoin here. Let's have everybody go through that process. And all I would ask is just give
these guys a chance. So maybe streamline the pipelines to get everyone set up.
Right. Make it easier to set up a bank account. It's very ironic when FinCEN and some of the other regulators come out and say, well, you banks can't wholesale de-risk, you know, this group just because they are in Bitcoin, just because they're MSBs. And the irony there is, well, you've made it very difficult for these banks to do that, and they're just simply making a business decision.
Yeah.
That's not an endorsement of the banks. It's just a reality.
Right.
They're putting into their calculus, you know, do I do business with these Bitcoin companies that maybe I can derive some income from, but the risk is just too much that in some formula it would never pan out for them.
Interesting, yeah. So basically, like, just easier access for all parties to kind of communicate, right?
Right. We just want to participate in the market.
Yeah.
And I'm no different than my clients and many of the other folks here in Inside Bitcoin. So we just want the opportunity to showcase our talents, what we have, and you know, we can't wait to get it out there to market. And in order to do that, we need to be able to do some basic things like take care of our finances.
Nice. Well, so last question before we get into how to get in touch with you, and you can plug your some of your projects you got going
on.
What would be some resources that people could look into, you know, whether it's Bitcoin or the blockchain or in your field, AML and KYC? Like, where do you direct people that are interested in brushing up and learning more about these issues?
Sure. So one of the folks that I like to plug, I'm very interested in CoinCenter, the work that Jerry Brito and his team were doing there in Washington. Fantastic research. They're on top of many of the issues. I don't have one single point of focus for research. I just encourage people to take on research. Research what AML is. Actually, go to the FinCEN website.
Yep.
It's very old and clunky.
Right.
There are a lot of dead links from what I hear. But there are great things and great ways to learn. Unfortunately, you'll be learning from a lot of other people's mistakes because you'll be reading settlement agreements. But nonetheless, those are valuable lessons from a compliance standpoint. And never stop researching, never stop learning, especially in the world of compliance. Anytime there's a story about compliance, you know, open up Google News and put in Bitcoin regulation, put in Bitcoin compliance, and see what comes up. And really read those articles and you know, surround yourself with that information and make informed decisions.
Nice. You just gave me a few things to add to my Google Alerts, which is a good idea.
Fantastic.
Because frankly, like, you know, like I mentioned, working in the cloud space as well, compliance is literally like on everyone's mind, and I would say it goes hand in hand with security, because it's like,
sure,
a lot of the time the compliance is based around security or lack thereof. So let's how do we get in touch with you and share some of your, you know, your projects you got going on? You got to know up some partnerships with some interesting folks, so yeah
that's great. So BitAML is my company.
Okay.
You can go to bitaml.com, or if you want to talk to me directly via email, it's joe@bitaml.com.
lovely.
Typically work with clients that are more in the startup phase. So if you're a Bitcoin ATM operator out there and you don't know what this whole AML KYC stuff is all about,
mm-hmm.
Definitely reach out to me. We also work with brokerage platforms, individual traders, peer-to-peer lenders. We've seen a lot of creative business models out there. So it certainly runs a gambit. But you have my email address, joe@bitaml.com. Great way to get in touch with me. Even if you just have a question about compliance, you want to start a dialogue, I don't charge for that.
Awesome.
It's
awesome.
Great to have that information out there. You mentioned projects. One company I'm proud to be working with right now is a company called Coinections out of Atlanta, Georgia. And they've recently just gone into a private beta, a limited beta, where they're launching their AML software. So I help on the framework, if you will. I help frame the building, right? So I set up the compliance program working with my clients to understand KYC, what information they need to gather. And where Coinections comes in is they're a great company to enforce that, if you will, through KYC software. They are able to integrate seamlessly into your Bitcoin ATM terminal or other web app, whatever presence or business offering that you have in the Bitcoin space. And what I like most about it is the ability to do some of the things in the back end, like queue up a SAR, be able to keep certain records based on regulatory requirements, and just as important, really keep that customer experience alive, right? So the customer leaves with a great experience, and they're not filling out a form like you would at a bank, right? They're able to seamlessly do that. And so I invite you guys to go on their website, coinactions.com. There's a little bar that appears there. Put in your email address. Sign up for a limited beta. It's completely free.
Does it also help with AML, or is it just the KYC stuff?
So AML and KYC
together. They go together.
Right,
okay,
yeah.
Sure.
So KYC is basically a component of AML. So knowing
Got
your customer,
it.
Gathering that customer information, really getting the information you need to retain during the course of that transaction with the customer, whether they're visiting your web app or, as I mentioned, possibly a Bitcoin ATM machine.
Got it. So, yeah, so you're enabling the ecosystem to move a little bit faster on some very expensive and difficult hurdles, regulation, compliance, right? Historically.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's something that's been, as you said, historically clunky and analog. Putting that customer first and getting that experience. So when we work with these Bitcoin ATM operators or exchange platforms, really having them understand we're not adding a layer. We're integrating with your offering. But we want the customer to not think of it as a KYC section of their experience. We want them to have the experience that you want them to have as a client and really enjoy that experience. And in the back end, we'll keep track of the KYC information.
And I think some of the value, just to kind of further like plug the knowledge that's and expertise being provided, you're helping people to really get that perfect fit. You know, like I when I talk to people in terms of about the cloud and IT, it's like you want that like, would you rather have that custom suit or that like cookie cutter suit that like may not fit equally across different people? So you're really making sure it's custom, you know, and you can get really granular with the discussions you can have with people if they have some other sort of weird branch based on maybe their functionality. You can probably help them navigate it. So it's kind of a good thing to maybe do up front and have the conversations early before you get too far down one rabbit hole and maybe it doesn't turn out as well as you'd like. So
yeah, and that is best. And one thing to note, based on the context you provided, so if you have one particular product or service and then you add on another product or service, that's going to completely change your risk profile. And so you're going to have to update your AML program.
Right, like from the ground up.
Right, so basically from the ground up, so you're going to have to sort of reinvent the wheel. But as I mentioned before, if you can sort of grow and mature as a business with your compliance program and have them grow up together, paying a little bit up front, relatively speaking, is really going to save you a lot in the back end.
Very nice. Well, I think we'll have to chat further about maybe
great.
Get more granular. You know, maybe we could have a more technical-oriented episode where you really break down some of the more like specific components. But I think this was a great overview of just the concept and what's being offered. I think a lot of people may not have even known these were big problems and issues, and I think you gave some really good insights. So thank you so much for your time.
Well, I appreciate it. And I'm probably one of the few people that gets excited about compliance. So anytime you want to have that discussion, I'm happy.
And I'm one of the few people that gets excited to ask you about compliance. So
that's great.
So there you go. Good
and
combo.
I feel like the more information that's out there, and even if you don't choose to work with BitAML or Coinactions, really, it's very important to get your compliance affairs in order really at the outset. Ask those probative questions and make sure that you're staying on the right side of the law, so to speak.
Nice, man. Perfect, dude. That's very good advice, and thank you again for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.